farmhouse. Don't send me to the poorhouse. You tax my pockets empty and my bills I cannot pay. Please, Mr. White House, I'm living in the doghouse. The bank just came to repossess and took my house away. Please, Mr. White House, don't send me to the jailhouse. I just want to live my life the way it's supposed to be. Please, Mr. White House, my friends are in the big house. I just want to have a home and feed my family. Please, Mr. White House, I can't afford a dollhouse. But you have many colored rooms with closet space to spare. Please, Mr. White House, tell me your house is my house. When I come to Washington, I'll move in with you there. Mr. White House, I'm living in the doghouse. The bank just came to repossess and took my house away. Please, Mr. White House, take your programs to the outhouse. Until the truth comes out of you, it's in there you can stay. Until the truth comes out of you, it's in there you can stay.
And that was another song by Mark Levy, Mr. White House, again from his album Shiro's Heroes. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert, and don't forget, you got a TV, you can see Bathrobes Pierre in living color, talking to Richard Quigley, the freedom fighter from Aptos, and he's got lots of colorful things to say. In fact, we're going to actually play a little of what he had to say yesterday. If I can find the right place in the tape while I'm looking, let's do a second to musical interlude. Actually, before we do a musical interlude, let's take a break and go instead to a tape that's about a month and a half old, but actually does a pretty good review of the Steve Argue case. Steve Argue, as you know, is being charged with assault. He punched a cop named David LeFevre, who videotapes seem to indicate was torturing a woman and her child in apparently his notion of public service. He was going to arrest the woman for assault because she touched him, she slapped him on the chest once, in a whole situation that had been provoked by the police, where people were surrounding a patrol wagon on May 22nd at a demonstration, peaceful but boisterous demonstration at the McPherson Center on Front Street. And Steve Argue's attorney is Ben Rice, who is taking on this case pro bono, and he held a press conference afterward, and this is some of it. This happened about 2 months ago, but not much has happened since then. Steve, I guess, will be coming back. He is actually going to be going to trial in a couple of weeks, so things are going to get pretty hot pretty fast. But here's how things were a month and a half ago, and as I said, it gives a pretty good background.
Would be handled in another.
No, how Steve was treated after he punched the cop is definitely relevant.
That will show the cop's attitude, right?
Exactly.
The violent attitude.
And LeFevre's perjuring himself about how he supposedly was approached by Julianne, when you can see quite clearly in the tapes he approaches her, how he perjured himself by saying that Julianne assaulted him, when you can see quite clearly that it's him assaulting Julianne, and those things are all very relevant to, you know.
We had thought when you were beat up later, we would do that in a civil suit filed against the cops, basically.
Okay, it's around 9 o'clock. We're at the Coffee Roasting Company talking to Scott Graham.
Well, that's interesting. But unfortunately, I think we lost our interview with Ben Rice. What a pity. I guess that was recorded over. My apologies, folks, for those of you who are interested. As a consolation prize, I'm going to play the full interview that I began to play about two shows ago with Dennis Rehm. Dennis is a homeless vehicle dweller who for 11 months has been fighting a sleeping ticket, a ticket for sleeping in his vehicle. First, he says he wasn't sleeping, but second, he says even if he were, it's a basic civil right that he should be allowed to sleep. It sounds like I'm just flapping my gums when I say these things, because I kind of watch myself talking these things, and I just can't believe that I'm wasting everybody's time by mentioning these obvious things. But, you know, this is Santa Cruz. This is Alice in Wonderland. This is buyer's land, where we live under the sleeping ban. So, got to say them. Anyway, so for 11 months, Dennis Rehm has been fighting the sleep-in-your-vehicle ticket. He now actually has an attorney, Peter Rehm, and he's been using a rather interesting defense called, I call it the Flory Jacobs Edwards defense, named after Robert Flory, David Jacobs, and Linda Edwards, three very strong, outspoken homeless activists of the early 90s who used this defense. And this defense essentially amounts to saying, yeah, you can find me guilty on a sleeping ticket, but you can't make me do community service or go to jail, because the basic sleeping ban law is what we call an infraction. An infraction is a minor crime, which means that you're not allowed a public defender or a jury trial. All cases are heard before a judge. But because of that, they're also not allowed to jail you. And because they can't jail you, they can't threaten you with jail as a sanction. And there was an attorney general's opinion that in fact is the case, that they could, if you don't pay an infraction fine, let's say that comes from some vehicular crime, like you go through a stop sign and then you don't pay your fine, what they can do is there's a misdemeanor crime called failure to pay a non-vehicular fine. But there's no such thing as failure to pay a vehicular fine. But there's no such thing as a failure to pay a non-vehicular fine. And the sleeping ban is not a vehicular infraction. It is a non-vehicular infraction. So it appears to be kind of in one of those special loophole areas. That's what Flory, Edwards, and Jacobs found 5-6 years ago and successfully used in a number of court cases. They got convicted of sleeping because they had to sleep. And then they told the judges, well, if you want to exact a penalty from us, we won't do community service. We refuse to do that. But you can fine us, and then you can attempt to collect the fine civilly, which is like, you know, suing a person for a certain amount of money. It means you can get a court order to confiscate their property. And that could be done. But, of course, for homeless people, since they have such, in many cases, so little valuable property, at least valuable by the lights of our materialistic society, that it doesn't really pay for the government to do that. So it essentially means that poor people get off the hook here, which, of course, is the point. And Dennis Rehm has Peter Leeming, his attorney, arguing just that. And here we're going to hear Peter Leeming explaining that situation. Dennis Rehm is, again, getting tired of going to court. What's happening is they're issuing a warrant for his arrest. He goes into court and says, this warrant is on the basis of an infraction, but you can't be jailed for an infraction, but a warrant would send you to jail, therefore the warrant is illegal. The judge says, you're right, the warrant was illegally issued. They revoke the warrant. But then the system issues another warrant anyway, and he has to come back and do it all again. So this case is going to be argued about 2 weeks into September, in about 2 weeks, that is, in court, in the court of Art Danner, former DA, now Judge Art Danner, Department, I believe it's 6, maybe it's 5. Anyway, it's 5 or 6. And here you hear Peter Leeming giving us a description in an interview took place a couple weeks ago, and I can pretty much assure you that we actually will be able to hear this interview.
Today would be a real good time.
We're here outside courtroom 6 with attorney Peter Leeming and his client Dennis Rehm, a member of supporters. Dennis, I guess I'm numbered, it'll be 11 months since you got your sleeping ticket in a vehicle?
On Friday it'll be 11 months. Uh-huh. And 8 court appearances in 2 months.
And why, Peter, you volunteered to help in this case?
That's right.
And you're not taking any money for this?
No, actually I'm charging Dennis minimum wage, which is what I do for three cases.
Outrageous for unheard of for an attorney to charge minimum.
$5.50 an hour, but don't let that word get out.
Hey, L-E-E-M-I-N-G, looming, call immediately. So Peter, this is your first appearance, second appearance for Danner, or on this case, or your first?
It's the second on this case.
And what happened at the first, and what happened here at the second?
Well, we set a motion that we're going to serve on the city attorney that argues the practice of issuing arrest warrants on homeless camping tickets is illegal.
Well, why would that be? Certainly, if a homeless person violates the law and sleeps at night, he or she should be responsible for his crime. And if he doesn't pay his fine or do his community service, shouldn't he be taken to jail and treated like any other criminal?
Well, the laws that justify arrest are very specific. And while you can be arrested for not paying a traffic ticket, and there's some specific statutes on that, that doesn't apply to municipal ordinances such as the camping ticket that we have here. So, in fact, the remedy of the city is that they can't arrest you, they can obtain a civil judgment, and they can just
give you a kiss.
Yeah, they can try and do that. I think the threat of intimidating people into paying money is more attractive to them than trying to get a civil judgment that they can't enforce.
And in fact, that is what they have been doing at least for the last 12 years, when I've been observing the court process around sleeping ban and camping tickets. You said that this could have been disposed of differently by Judge Danner, that is to say, he could have simply quashed the warrant, but apparently chose not to take that course.
Well, I think he wants to have the city attorney involved in resolving this question, which is valid, and I certainly invite that input from him.
And the warrant, this is a warrant that's gone out to you twice, Dennis, so that you could have been arrested, your vehicle impounded, you could have been taken to jail for, but apparently it's a bogus warrant. There's no basis for a warrant on a failure to obey a non-vehicular municipal code, is that correct?
That's what I feel, and that's the court. According to what we've been able to find out, according to the statutes, that's the case.
And do you, with your professional expertise, do you agree with this lay opinion?
Yeah, I've written a brief to that effect, and hopefully we can get Judge Danner to agree with that as well.
Now, doesn't this mean, does this have profound significance for the city? This means that nobody can be arrested for a sleeping ticket? Is that another issue? Is that a broader issue?
That might be a separate issue. I can certainly envision situations where the city could arrest people for just about anything they want to if they pass the appropriate laws and they seek to enforce them in the appropriate manner. But that's not what happened here.
Well, I know we frequently see on court calendars FTP, failure to pay, and that is often also seen on warrants which go out, and you're telling us that simply the letters FTP is generally not sufficient in non-vehicular municipal code cases such as the sleeping ban, or let's say jaywalking, or no thought on that?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on that, but again, you're asking for a pretty broad answer. I think what we have to look at is this case and the practice and this kind of case in this county. And in this kind of case in this county, there appears to be no authority for the issuance of an arrest warrant when somebody doesn't pay their camping ticket.
That's a very significant statement, even when you limit it that way. So this means under Municipal Code 6.36.010, which is the camping or the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance, sections A and B, or section A actually, that anyone who is convicted of this particular section is in a position where the court, or so the city attorney, has to sue that person civilly to get the fine or the money out of that person, unless that person voluntarily agrees to pay their community service. Is that your understanding?
Well, I'm not sure what alternatives may exist to them, but certainly that's the state of the situation now.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying then that the 500 to 1500 homeless people who sleep out at night may actually have some recourse from having to not only be arrested, taken to jail, harassed, searched, otherwise humiliated at midnight, but also may be able to sort of stand back and say, I'm not going to pay their fines? Is that a possible alternative now for some homeless people, or would you go that far?
Well, first of all, I'm not personally aware of situations where people actually have been arrested for failing to pay this fine, and if anybody out there is has been arrested for failure to pay fine on a camping ticket, I'd suggest that they call you, Robert, and we interview them and talk to them about that, because I'd be very interested in hearing that.
423-4833 for all your listeners if you have been arrested for failure to pay a camping ticket.
But apart from that, I think the laws were clear, and the Attorney General actually has published a written opinion on this question that says that you cannot be arrested for violation of a municipal ordinance unless it's a traffic ticket, and there's specific statutes that allow you to be arrested for non-payment of a fine on a traffic ticket.
This is Attorney General's opinion from 1980, and it's still good?
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Mr. Lenny, and anything else you wish to add?
No, that's all. Thank you, Robert.
Dennis?
Well, see you next time.
Next time will be August 27th at 10 o'clock in the morning. August 27th, 10 o'clock in the morning.
Department 6.
And actually, that date has been moved up to September, and I don't actually have it with me, but it's not in the next week, so you won't miss it, and you can catch it if you tune in to Bathrob Spears Broadsides here on 96.3 FM. You've been listening to a conversation in court in August between myself, Dennis Rehm, a civil rights advocate, homeless man, and I can say a fighter for the rights of other people in who live in their vehicles, and his attorney, Peter Leeming, who's doing the work not free, but for minimum wage, which is quite a change for most attorneys, that's for sure. And he's extended an invitation. If you've been arrested for failing to pay a sleeping ban or a camping ticket, please give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll put you in touch with him, and he would like to talk to you about your case and consider perhaps a lawsuit around that issue. Again, 423-4833 if you have been arrested for failing to pay a camping ticket. Now, the reason that's important is because failure to pay is actually not a real code. It is a sort of a something made up by the county that goes into their computers but doesn't reflect a real statute, certainly not in this case with the sleeping ban, because as Attorney Peter Leeming told us, and we learned through the work of activists Flory, Edwards, and Jacobs, in the Feige defense, as I call it, there is no law that makes it criminal not to pay, that makes it criminal to avoid paying a non-vehicular infraction code fine. And maybe that'll be changed by the state legislature in the future, but that's the case now. And hauling people in on warrants for failure to pay such crimes is itself an abuse and a violation of civil liberties under color of law, something which this county is quite familiar with and does quite regularly, particularly in the court of Judge Meat Grinder Mulligan, the mad king of the basement department, the guy who hears most of the traffic fines unless you disqualify him. Meat Grinder Mulligan has, for a decade, when people were dragged in on failures to appear, told them that they didn't have the right to a jury trial or a public defender. And in fact, since they failure to appear subjects you to an arrest, you certainly have that right. But I've learned recently, and I talked about this in the last show, that apparently Mulligan has been backed up by the judges, even though they can't give any law as authority for their strange notion that you can be treated as though you're a criminal, even though there's no law that says you are when you fail to appear. In the sense that if you fail to appear, you have a right to a jury trial and a public defender, because it's a misdemeanor, a more extensive crime than an infraction. But because Mad Dog Mulligan doesn't like the paperwork, he treats these things as infractions, which means that the fines are less, but you don't get the protection of a jury trial or a public defender, even if you ask for it. So it's an interesting situation. And here we have a phone call, which will thankfully get me off this whole question.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, this sounds like Patches to me.
Yeah, it does. You know, I'm kind of radio shy, but I'd like to type all this up for you.
Uh-huh.
And do it that way.
So you want to talk it all on the air? Or?
No. I'd like to type all this up for you because there's a lot of issues. And what I'll do is I'll go to Kinko's tomorrow or find a typewriter and type everything up for you, because there's a lot of issues.
Well, be advised
radio shy.
You're probably self-conscious about talking to the community. You are going live at the moment. So,
oh, okay.
So, I mean, I think it's good you called in. We actually called Needle Exchange and tried to talk to them about the discrimination that some people who use Needle Exchange are suffering.
Oh, yeah.
And if at any time you want to talk about that live, we'd love to hear about it.
Well, what's going on with that is that the police are, gosh, I have all this written down. Hold on.
Mm-hmm. We're on the air with Patches, a homeless woman who, well, I recently encountered in the New Leaf parking lot.
Okay.
Hi, Patches.
Okay. First of all, yeah, the police are policing this place, and the drop-in center, and you know, it makes people paranoid, and it makes them embarrassed, because then after that, the police follow them, and will harass them an hour or two later, and if you have search and seizure, then that gives them an excuse to search you, and that isn't necessarily true. You can be coming to the needle exchange to get antibiotics. You can be coming here to get alcohol swabs. You can be coming here to get cotton things for a sore tooth with cloves.
Or you could be coming to get needles, and why shouldn't you do so? Isn't that the whole point of the needle exchange, to give you a place to exchange dirty needles for clean needles?
Exactly, and that keeps the community safe.
Yeah, and yet you say you have been searched by police after leaving needle exchange?
Yes, I have.
And how many times has this happened in the last week, let's say?
Oh, in the last week, twice.
And in the week before?
Well, in the last month, it's been about 5 times.
And is this, do you think this is an increase in the number of times, or is this standard, or what's your sense about this?
I think it's increased, totally.
And why do you think this is?
Because they have a new police, they changed forces about 2 months ago, where that there's a new police force on this shift of 7 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mean 7 in the evening to 7 in the morning?
Yes, exactly. And they are, it's a Japanese police officer, and I've seen him do some, okay, for instance, he grabbed a cigarette out of a kid's hand the other day at New Leaf, and the kid happened to be 18, but he grabbed the cigarette out of his hand, searched him, and called in on him for warrants and all that.
Was this a CSO or an ordinary SCPD?
This is a definite city cop.
And this wasn't Officer Malate, was it? Officer Malate?
Yes, it is.
He was Officer Malate.
Yes, it is.
So maybe he's become a city police officer in the meantime. I thought he was a CSO.
Nope. And, okay, then we have leaning on a public property water fountain. This gentleman is about 55, something like that. He had two bags of groceries, and he leaned on the water fountain, so he got a ticket for that, for leaning on public property.
Do you recall the name of the officer who gave it to
him? Same one.
Officer Malate.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't want to really put that name on him because...
This was an Asian American officer, you're saying, though?
Tall
Asian American. It might not be Officer Malate, although I've got to tell you, Officer Malate got a very bad reputation in my book when he went after John Telfair about 6 months ago, a man who's 67, 68 years old. He gave him a ticket for holding up a sign asking for money within 50 feet of a change-making machine, which is a legal thing to do. You cannot ask for money verbally, but you can hold up a sign.
Right.
And the same officer also told John Telfair that he could not sit down and ask for money from a seated position with his sign. Again, a false reading of our nasty downtown ordinances. They're nasty enough even without Officer Malate misreading them to the public, and that's what he did with John Telfair. Now, I don't know what police officer you're talking about is doing this, and apparently you don't know the name either at this moment.
No, I don't.
But it could well be Officer Malate, and I would say whoever it is, stop doing it. And to the sergeants who may be listening, make sure you train your officers so that they do not harass homeless and poor people needlessly.
Okay, and I have a whole bunch of stuff for
you.
Go
ahead.
Okay, ticket for sitting on public property, which is a bench.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sleeping in a friend's backyard, which he had written permission, but it was written on a Foster Freeze menu paper, so they said that was not permissible. So they gave him a ticket.
Mm-hmm. These are people that you actually trust, you feel they're giving you honest accounts.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Okay, someone left their property on the sidewalk with someone watching them while they went to the restroom, mm-hmm. watching his property while they went to the restroom. They gave him a ticket for leaving it on public property.
And did you hear this later, or did you actually see this?
I didn't see this, no. I've just been researching.
Good. I'm glad you're researching
it.
Do you know the names of any of the officers involved in these tickets?
Actually, we have two, but I don't. I know their first names, but I don't know them by last name.
Well, who are the officers whose first names you know?
Okay, Mike, which is a heavyset blonde. And
what ticket did Mike give?
He gave the one sitting on the sidewalk. I mean, sitting on the public property.
Which, in the public property in this case, was a bench? It's legal to sit on a bench.
Yes, exactly.
I'm afraid Mike has got to go back to the law library. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, and then because I have search and seizure.
Which means that you have a clause because you are on, you've been on probation or been on parole.
Exactly.
Or on parole. You have at any time you have to submit yourself to a search. This is because of a drug war type enforcement crime that you were convicted of?
No. Well, I was under the influence.
Under the influence.
But,
I call that a drug war thing because it means you were engaging in behavior that didn't hurt anyone else, but that you were penalized for and now have to submit to humiliating searches.
Exactly. And I have a fear of even, let's see, because I have all this written down. I have a fear of mentioning any names because of retaliation from them. So,
have you suffered any retaliation recently?
Almost every other day.
And what form does this retaliation take?
Yesterday I went to see my husband where he works, and I got searched because I was walking with two people, and evidently one of them, in their eyes, was a known drug dealer, and so they searched me, and the girl with me that was walking with me, because I didn't know him, she didn't have a search clause, so they couldn't touch her. But
did you get searched by a female officer or by a male officer?
No, I didn't. No, a male officer.
How intrusive was the male officer?
He went through all my stuff and pulled out my pockets and took my shoes and socks off.
Did he touch any of your body parts?
Yeah, my legs.
But none of your other body parts?
No.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. And I've worked in the drop-in center and been a client here for 8 years. And like I said, their services are for the younger people, the younger generation, and adults. And the police are frequenting this place where that people are paranoid to even come in here and get needs that they need to have. Let me see here.
I know our previous talk show host is a worker at the drop-in center, and she has been outspoken in her anger at this continuing police harassment. And we're hoping to get an interview with her perhaps next show.
Well, the one officer told me definitely the reason he searched me was because he had seen me at the needle exchange in the back. And that, yeah, I was copying needles, that was his exact words. And so that's why he had searched me.
So in essence, they are criminalizing people for doing what needle exchange, what the legislature says they want needle exchange to do, although Governor Gray Davis, of course, has his own medieval views on this whole issue. What Cynthia Matthews, our council member, got this city council to unanimously support, which is needle exchange as a health measure. The police department, you're saying, is acting to thwart this?
Oh, yeah, I totally believe that. Oh, yeah, yes, 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 yes. They're, like I said, they're intimidating people to not even come around.
Is this having its impact, or are people still coming?
They're coming, but they're so paranoid, you know. It's like you got to zip in and out, you know, because the police might be out there.
Well, what is this some kind of, you know, sadistic little game the police are playing? I mean, they must know that people are concerned about their health. They're going to come in and try to get needles exchanged, even if they have to run the gauntlet of the police. I mean, are you faced with, if you're found with a needle, does this mean that you will be, you know, your probation will be revoked and you'll be sent back to jail?
Oh, yeah.
So they're saying that needleless exchange is okay except for people on probation who cannot use it? Is that what they're saying?
I think that someone would get a new charge, even if they are on probation.
So they're going after everybody in the hopes of catching people with needles?
Oh, yeah, they're looking.
And do you have any sense, as you say, this is partially because there's a new shift of cops, and I also heard it said,
definitely,
from my previous talk show host and the worker at the needle exchange, that it was because of the district attorney, Ron Ruiz, who has vowed to, I don't know, remove heroin from the scene or something?
I've heard something like that, but I'm not sure about that. I haven't got that far into it. But, and then if we get off that,
sure.
I would like to know, okay, if someone has a van and they're, you know, they need a place to sleep and they don't have the financial capabilities of going to a campsite, where are they legally to park?
Okay, the places you can legally park are the following. In the city, you can park in a church parking lot with the written permission of the church, provided there are not more than three vehicles doing that. That's point one. So you could go ask a church to let you sleep there for the night, and they have to give you written permission. In actual practice, that's hard to do because there are only four or five churches who agree to do that. But there are some churches who do. Secondly, you can park on private property outside the city. Though you may get harassed by the sheriff's deputies, it is technically legal for you to park on private property outside the city limits. Some people also park in places like Davenport, where suddenly these no parking from 3 to 6 a.m. signs are appearing, essentially to harass people and stop them from parking at night and sleeping overnight. But that is, it's still legal. Where parking is not barred, you can park definitely on private property. And if you are, in theory, you can say if you're stopped by a police officer in the county, not in the city, but in the county, mm-hmm. and you're sleeping in your vehicle, if you can claim credibly that you are what's called a motorist and not a homeless person living in a vehicle for any length of time, you can claim that's an,
okay.
what's called an emergency exception to their, it's called roadside resting, and you're allowed to roadside rest. But unfortunately, we had earlier this year thought that actually on public property in the county you could sleep, that they couldn't do anything about it. That was just the right of a, there was no sleeping ban in the county except in some very small no camping zones. But unfortunately, the county council ruled against us on that issue. That's not the case, and it's generally, there is a sleeping ban throughout the county except that you are allowed to pull over.
Mm-hmm.
And you are allowed to sleep if you claim it is roadside resting because you feel it's important for you to rest just in order not to cause an accident.
Okay.
And the third thing you can do if you're in the city, again, going back to the city, you can go to a church and try to get their written permission, or you can park for 3 days per month in the driveway of a person with a private home.
Okay.
One car in a driveway with their permission, but only 3 days per month.
Okay.
And it's kind of strange why they would say that, but that, don't ask me why. They're wild and crazy.
Okay, now, all right, when someone's camping out, if it's not on private property,
mm-hmm.
and on, I would assume it's city property, what kind of rights do we have on that?
Okay, by camping, do you mean with a tent or...
No, just
sleeping
out there.
Sleeping on city property?
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay,
levy-wise... That type of thing.
Right. Sleeping anywhere in Santa Cruz outside at night after 11 o'clock, with the exception in a vehicle or outside of a vehicle, in a structure or outside a structure, unless that's what's called a domicile, which means a house or a hotel. You fall asleep in a restaurant, that's illegal, by the way, in case you didn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's not usually enforced, but it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
You fall asleep in a movie theater, that's illegal if it's after 11 o'clock. Not usually enforced, but it's illegal in Santa Cruz. You know, you fall asleep in any place that is not a house or a hotel, what's called a domicile, built for the express purpose of sleeping, it's illegal. So, if you fall asleep in a detached garage, that's illegal, even if it's on private property. This is your Santa Cruz City Council at work. And it is illegal to cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night, anywhere in the city. It's not illegal to cover up with blankets in a car, however, so you can get happy about that. The fact of the matter is, though, Patches, they're starting, as I understand it, to issue more camping tickets. Have you found
out? Oh, yes, I got one.
You did? When did you get one?
I got one about 2 months ago.
2 months ago?
But I was on private property.
You were on private property?
I went to court on it.
Were you with the permission of the owner or not?
No.
Without the permission of the owner?
No. And I got a ticket, and it was $81. I also got a ticket for washing windows without a business license, and the judge scratched his head and kind of chuckled and threw that one out at the for the interest of justice.
But you were, in fact, and that was that, and I want to give credit, that was Referee Mulligan, right? Or was
yes.
it? So Referee Mulligan, actually, we got to chalk up one positive action for Referee
he
Mulligan.
He just didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I first ran into you, or at least most recently, you've been washing windows along with your friend Chico in the parking lot of the New Leaf Market. But we haven't seen you there recently. I know you've had some rather serious medical problems. You actually had a heart attack, and you were taken off to the hospital for a day or two, right?
So I'm not permitted on the lot anymore
because of your
liability.
Because of your health condition and liability.
Yes.
I see. So you get too sick, they start clamping down on you for other reasons.
Boy. Yes, I'm a liability now, so. But I don't want to get on New Leaf because they do permit him to work, and
is there harassment of what we call squeegeeing or window washing in other places in town?
Oh, yes.
Or other places where people can wash windows? What's the story?
On washing windows, it's really not permitted. I have to, duck and dodge. And I haven't had any problem. I haven't been after the Capitol Mall for a while, but there are Lucky's out in Capitola. I haven't had any problem with them. But, yeah, they, here at New Leaf, that's kind of understandable. I can give them some air on that, because if something were to happen, then, because I almost died that day. So.
Right, but the idea of, and New Leaf doesn't restrict window washing by other people,
no.
But other places in the city do, and I'm not going to give them any leeway on that. I think that if a person wants to wash your windows and offers that, you can say no, and if they don't harass you further, there's no problem.
Exactly. They're adults. They can say yes or no.
Now, you also said that you got an $81 fine for your camping ticket.
Uh-huh.
Your camping ticket was issued 2 months ago?
Yes.
Well, in fact, after April 23rd, fines for all, and we're talking sleeping tickets, right? You're not talking about being under a tent or something?
No. They woke us up and asked us what we were doing.
Sleeping?
Well, it was pretty obvious what we were doing.
Well, sleeping tickets are supposed to be $54 maximum, nothing like $81, nothing like $162, which they've been sending out notices telling people about. Now, I got a call from Mayor Byers this evening, which said, oh, gosh, we didn't tell the courts about this, but we hope it's all going to be okay. But, of course, it's not retroactive and so forth.
Well, actually, it was $135, and Mulligan dropped it to $81.
Well, it's illegal to do anything higher than $54. That's what Catherine Byers' new sleeping ban law said as of April 23rd, a month after it was passed, which is when it went into effect.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is that the city mayor and city attorney and city council and the county judges care so little about the rights of homeless people that they're allowing the courts to continue to charge the fines that used to be the case, $162, or in this case, $81, when it's illegal to do that. The fine specifies shall not be more than $54. Actually, they say $20, but you add on more court costs, you get up to $54.
So. And how does that work, Robert, with all these court costs? I mean, if they don't allow me to work, for one thing, how am I supposed to pay my fines?
Well, they will, of course, tell you that you can do community service. Were you given that option?
No, I wasn't.
Really?
No.
Mulligan didn't say you could do community service?
He didn't even mention it.
Interesting. Of course, if you've been listening to my show, you might have heard also that there's a man, Dennis Rehm, going into court who lives in his vehicle, who's refusing to do either community service or pay a fine, and he's getting an attorney to fight that issue, and I'm hoping that if he's successful, I can get that kind of information out to you and other folks who are living outside more broadly. What else have you got to tell us? Anything more about troll busters or people who are attacking homeless people as a kind of a thrill hit crime?
I haven't heard anything about that lately.
Well, that's good news. And
yeah, that is. I have not heard anything about that lately.
That is good news.
It's more the police than anything.
So again...
wait a minute.
Go ahead.
I really want to do this.
And you are going live out to our Santa Cruz community.
Do.
Okay.
And I got arrested for a warrant, which were fines. And
you got arrested for failure to pay?
Failure to appear on a fine.
Failure to pay,
yeah.
It was failure to pay. What kind of a fine was it? For what?
Open container.
Open container. That's still a non-vehicular infraction. We should talk later because you were listening to my show, and listeners will remember earlier, attorney Peter Leeming, who's defending this guy who lives in his vehicle, wants to defend people who have been arrested for failure to pay.
Okay.
So I can give you, for those who, you can call me at 423-HUFF after this is over, or we can arrange to talk some more when I put on some music, but please go ahead with what you were saying.
Okay, I've never seen so much violence from the police as I have in that 5 hours I was there before I got booked and got booked in. And they have a chair in there that is like an built like an electric chair. It's leather, but it looks like an electric chair. And it takes five officers to get someone in there because they're intoxicated. And instead of talking them out of the intoxication or giving them some compassion, they antagonize them. If the gentleman's beating on the door, whatever, the cop goes beats on the door. So it just, you know, just makes the matters worse.
So what? Tell me more about this leather chair. This is something that people are kind of strapped into?
Yes, they're strapped into. They put chains on their arms. They put chains on their neck. They put chains around their waist. They put chains on their ankles. And they put leather around all that. Then they put a hood on their head.
Now, this isn't something you're making up out of a drug-induced or alcoholic fog patches.
No,
this is something that you actually saw.
I was crying. I couldn't believe it. There was another lady in the holding tank also. And there's been several people out here that have experienced it. And I heard an officer say that the agony would bring reality to their mind.
The agony will bring reality to their mind. What kind of reality they're talking about? What is this?
I guess their own.
What is this a punishment for example?
Well, he was kicking on the door.
So this guy was kicking on the door, so they...
Mm-hmm.
And now you... How... This was in the holding area of the jail?
Yes.
So you actually... How far away from this whole situation?
Oh, I watched the whole thing. I was like kitty corner to it. I watched the whole thing.
You were in another cell, kitty corner?
Mm-hmm.
And tell me what you saw again.
They told him to get on his... You know, they told him to quit kicking the door, and then they started kicking it. And when he wouldn't quit kicking it, they went ahead and there was five of them, and they told him to get on his stomach. And they picked him up, threw him in it, and chained him down. And he just screamed, you know, he said, I'm sorry. And they just chained him in and put a hood on him. And the nurse came.
They put a hood on him. What kind of a hood was that?
I didn't see the hood part. I've heard that in per se. I didn't see
How
that.
How do you know that he had a hood on him?
When they opened the door, when the nurse went in to check his blood pressure and all that, the nurse does go in every half hour to check his blood pressure. And I wonder if he had a seizure in it. You know, I mean, alcoholics have seizures.
How do you know he had a hood, though?
Because I saw him put the hood on his head.
I see. Was this a leather hood or a cloth hood?
I couldn't tell that much.
So this sounds like the way they used to send in Nazi doctors to check if their torture victims were still able to endure more torture. Is this?
I saw this. You know, I mean, this is something I saw. I mean, it's
this was in Mark Tracy's Mark Tracy's jail. Is that right?
I don't know about that.
I mean, this was in. Well, that is to say, this is in. Mark Tracy is the sheriff of Santa Cruz County. This is in the Santa Cruz County Jail on Water Street.
Yes. Yes.
And how long ago was this?
This was a month and a half.
A month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us, is there more to this story?
I asked him. In fact, I asked him when I got out. I asked him, how long did you guys keep him? And they said 5 hours. Because I heard one of the officers says, I don't agree with this.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just like overhearing. And so I asked him, how long did they keep him? And they said 5 hours. And so I don't know if that's true or not, because when you go in drunk, that's what they usually do, is 5 or 6 hours. But, and he was irate and all that, but, you know, he got a grip, and then he was asking and crying for some water. You know, please give me some water. Nobody would take him water.
Mm-hmm. I suppose he probably pissed his pants. I mean, that could easily happen.
That's as far as I can go with that, but wonder if he would have a seizure. Wonder if... I've never seen Santa Cruz get as brutal as they have in the last year.
Now, any other, I mean, you're talking about brutality by the sheriffs in this particular kind of practice they're using.
Yes.
Which sounds like an institutionalized form of brutality, a kind of hate crime, if you will.
Yes.
And this, of course, is what Richard Quigley was accusing the sheriffs of doing to Jerry Henry, the man out in the Apto shopping center who tries to advise young people of their rights and is being harassed methodically, systematically, and rather ruthlessly by some of the deputies out there. But have you seen this happening in any other aspects of the police department or First Alarm?
No, this is the first time I've heard of it, mm-hmm. but this is the first time I've ever seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like a 45, 50-year-old man. Not any youngster, so anything could happen to him.
I see.
And I was booked in before he was released, so I don't know.
further tales for us of what's going on, any further reports?
That's about it.
Well, hang on the line for a minute. We'll put on some music, and I'll have a word with you privately.
Okay.
We've been talking to, may I use your name on the air?
Patches.
Patches. Stay with us. Hang on.
The images on TV.
No, blame Canada!
Blame Canada!
Before the beady little eyes, the clapping heads so full of lies.
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
We need to form a force of
Canada!
Don't blame me for my son Sam. He saw the darn cartoon and now he's off to join the clan. And my boy Eric once had my picture on his shelf. But now when I see him, it tells me to fuck myself.
Well, blame Canada!
It seems that everything's gone wrong since Canada came along.
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
They're not even a real country anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, rich and true. Instead, he burned a pack of piggy on a barbecue.
Should we blame the matches?
Should we blame the fire?
Or the doctors who allowed it to expire?
Heck no!
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
And the kitchen maid too.
Blame Canada! Shame on Canada!
Oh, the smoke in the south, the truck, the fresh, the rocker, and buck, the swabby, and duck, we must win, and the cause of fuss, before somebody thinks of Canada!
Capital Steps presents How the Gates Stole Christmas. Every who used Yahoo liked Yahoo a lot. But Bill Gates, who had never owned Yahoo, did not.
If I can't get the world to use Gates as Explorer, next Tuesday I could be a billion bucks poorer.
Then he had an idea to the factory, he called it.
I won't give them a choice. That's why I pre-installed it.
But he didn't stop there. Next he called his attorney.
I must control Elmo and sleep and snore Ernie. Each who would like to hear giggling and snoring, or a hoo-choo train run, or a fire truck roaring, or a music box dance, or a little car drive, must own Microsoft Word and Windows 95.
You're a keen one, Mr. Gates. You know how to make a buck. You're so rich that all your money must be hauled in a truck, Mr. Gates. Why, you've got a fortune bigger than the combined net worth of France, Australia, Japan, Sri Lanka, the Sultan of Brunei, Donald Trump, Michael Jordan, the Queen of England, Oprah Winfrey, the Emir of Kuwait, and Scrooge McDuck. Then the Gates thought the money would pour in and pour in, till he noticed that Ernie was no longer snoring. There's one thing the Gates had not counted on, maybe, was that all people wanted was cute
Beanie Babies!
The next Nobel they're awarding for peace should be given to someone known to the police. Round the NBA, there are coaches who joke about a guard who got fired 'cause he tended to choke. Latrell, 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 be well. Soon you'll be working at Taco Bell.
That's the often weak but sometimes amusing Capital Steps. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 in its closing 10 minutes. Actually, it's closing 5 minutes. My next talk show successor, upcoming Uncle Dennis of Earth First, is almost never late. In fact, he's almost always early. I only hope he hasn't been shot by mad loggers on the road. You never can tell what they're going to do next. Dennis is a fountain of information. I encourage you to stay tuned for his show. You need a pencil and paper, and a computer and a telephone and a fax also help, because he's got information that not only do you need to input, you need to act on it. So definitely stay tuned for Uncle Dennis and Earth First. We're going to kind of go out of this show. Well, we're gonna stay with you for a while until Dennis shows up, but we're going to play a little bit more from Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, Rancho Del Mar, and the situation where Richard Quigley and Jerry Henry have been helping young people to keep their rights intact. We are talking to Richard Quigley at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center on September 1st, about 12:10 in the afternoon. Reports that we actually documented about a year ago, was it, of harassment of young people for, I don't know, leaning on these structures for... they walled off an area in front of a liquor store as being impassable territory. There was concern about young people being picked up by Deputy Thurber for being truant or smoking inappropriately, and a number of concerns which some people have construed as being harassment of young people. That no longer happens here?
No, it's all but stopped. The young people in this community now come down and hang out and feel welcome, and they're not harassed, and they even break out an occasional little hacky sack game. It's to the point where sometimes the responsible adults have to walk over and say, you know, if you want them to continue to leave you alone, you can't do that. You know, so it's to the point where the community now has their kids back, and that part's a hell of a lot more comfortable than it has been. The guy that arranged that, it's so good that the kids have long forgotten how bad it was. And so that the guy that arranged all that doesn't have the gratitude that...
Who is the man that arranged it?
It had to be Jerry Henry.
We actually have this man sitting right here on the sidewalk. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
And is Richard just, you know, showering you with undeserved praise, or do you think this is an accurate assessment of your role here?
Well, it's one of the joys I do get, is to be able to sit back and watch the kids be kids now and not be dumped on and stuff. It's been one of the rewards in this whole thing, if there has been any. And yeah, well, it has been rewarding being able to see the kids play an acoustical guitar and not threaten to be able to sit there and not be threatened just because they're a kid.
Yeah. Do you know if there's been any official documents or do you have reports from meetings of the Merchants Association or the Sheriff's Merchants contacts where they actually have talked about a specific change in policy as to how young people are to be treated here?
No, I just know what I've seen here.
And how long has this change been for?
Oh, I'd say we've seen the change last 3-4 months, Richard.
Yeah, been the last 6 months max. But yeah, it's been the last 3 or 4 months in particular.
And prior to this time, had there been a time when there was less harassment, then suddenly there was a period of more harassment? Or was there just generally a sort of an ongoing harassment of young people here?
Oh, over the years, it's been off and on some, but mostly on. And now First Alarm, we had a security guard here this summer that was a college student, and most of the kids went to school with him, and he wasn't going to buy into the story that these were bad kids at all. He knew them all. And he had a pretty good summer here, I think, and I think that's one of the things that helps. He goes back to college soon. We can only hope we get another security guard, if we have to have one, that knows these kids for who they are and what they are, that they're good kids.
One thing, we just spoke to Sergeant Hemingway for about 20 minutes. What Sergeant Hemingway said was he would like to see a skate park for young people in the county. Would you agree with that?
Only if it wasn't a concentration camp. If they intended to run all the kids to there and that's the only place they were allowed to be, I'd hate to see it.
Richard?
The same thing. And Jerry has always warned of that concentration camp. He just, you know what, they build a yard, and now if the kids aren't in that yard or at home, then they're going to be harassed again.
if it's a free choice for them to go there or not, and there's nobody driving them there, and nobody requiring them to stay there, nobody harassing them if they don't go there, at some place that they're at only because they want to be there, not because it's the least of the hassles they'll live with. They had some place like that, of course, you know. I mean, what kind of jerk would you have to be to want to cut them off from that? But that's never been what these people had in mind. These people have in mind getting them all rounded up and stuck in one little corner so that they move out. They just, well, they got a place to go and they want to run them out. And if they could climb over that and offer them something, yeah. But there's a real danger.
You've seen that with the homeless, haven't you, Robert?
Yeah, that has been the criticism of the Homeless Community Resource Center, that it's a sort of a merchant dumping ground for homeless people, that they simply want to lure them away from the downtown into an area where they are not so visible and therefore not a, quote, deterrent to tourist activity.
Wouldn't you agree that it's more drive than lure?
Well, it's interesting. You know, one would think that that might be true too, except that the police also engage in counterproductive behavior like jaywalking tickets of people walking around the homeless services center. I mean, you would think they give them jaywalking tickets downtown, but it seems there. Some people feel that there is a kind of a constant low-level drive to get rid of poor and homeless people from Santa Cruz City and surrounding areas.
You know, the city. You know what Jerry calls that?
What do you call that, Jerry?
I call it social cleansing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, now I... Well,
that's social cleansing, and now we're having studio cleansing, as Uncle Dennis has indeed arrived and is preparing you for a hot 2 hours of heavy, thick, dense activism. None of this couch potato caca stuff. You're going to get out there and kick a little butt, or hopefully save a few species, a few trees, some environment that we're all going to need and our kids are going to need. A little justice for the planet. I want to thank you for being with me on Bathrob Spears Broadsides. This show, the next edition of it, will be coming up on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the afternoon, actually in the morning, then running till 1:30 in the afternoon. Until then, give a call to 423-4833. It's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, and we'll consider anything you have to tell us in terms of stuff to put on the air, and you'll also get some interesting messages. Thanks for being with us, and stay tuned for Uncle Dennis.
Hello, you've reached HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. This is also a message phone for Robert and for Becky. This message was recorded August 31st. If you want to skip it, push the pound key. On noon, on August 31st, there will be a meeting of the Homeless Issues Task Force for the hot short-term issues. That will be at the City Manager's Conference Room, which is at City Hall, 809 Center Street. Everyone's invited. Then at 7 o'clock on the 31st, on Channel 71, Club Cruz will be playing a show on civil rights for young people and freedom fighter Richard Quigley. The show will be repeated on Thursday, September 2nd at 7 p.m. on Channel 71. Wednesday, September 1st from 10 to noon is the Bathroom Task Force, or Crohn's Prepper Commission, as we fondly call it. That's at room 202 from 10 to noon at the Public Works Building. Phone number for any further information is 420-5184. If you want information about the Homeless Issues Task Force, I suggest you give a call to Ken Cole during working hours weekdays at 458-6020. Or you can leave a message on this line, and I can try to get back to you, although I'm not a member of the Homeless Issues Task Force, and I continue to call it the Homeless Issues Task Farce until I see something coming out of it that is substantial. Finally, on September 2nd, noon, on Thursday, there will be a meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board. At least member Sandy Brown will be meeting at... Sandy Brown will be meeting as a member of the board and picking up information at the Buttery, which is at North Branch of Forte and Soquel. Leave a message. I'll get back to you.